Hello, and welcome to the Trauma Mama podcast, where we talk about what trauma is, how it happens, what it does to our brains, behaviors, and relationships, and most importantly, what we can do about it. I'm your host and Trauma Mama, Alexandra Pratt. Hey there, and welcome back. It's September 2020, and we're still very much in a pandemic. And it's been so tough. We've missed out on so many things. On school, on jobs, on family visits, events, concerts, and opportunities. And we're still continuing to miss out. So we just gotta keep hanging on. We can tolerate this and we can get through to the other side when there will be things that we can look forward to that we haven't been able to do this year. I think we need to allow ourselves to feel those negative emotions, to grieve, to be upset and frustrated, to list out the things that we're missing and reflect on it. And then look around and see the things that this quarantine and this pandemic have brought us, some positive benefits that we've learned about ourselves through leaning into this discomfort. As things are opening up, I think it's really important we continue to remember there are people dying every day still of this. And it's our responsibility to take care of each other and wear a mask, even if we don't understand it. Even if it's uncomfortable, we got to do it because that's the right thing to do. Because as humans, we have to care about each other and the planet and work together instead of against each other. So I'm going to try something new today. I'm going to try a podcast style that I really like and I really enjoy. And at the same time, it's always really intimidated me to try. Because of my OCD, I have this tendency to try to really make everything perfect, and I would edit each episode and make all my words pronounced correctly and no run-on thoughts or ums and thinking moments. I'd edit that all out, but I am going to try it differently because it's important to lean into things that typically make me feel uncomfortable, but behaviors that I know are my anxieties coming out in these physical behaviors. So if I can kind of gain control and comfort of that behavior driven by anxiety, that's how I've found it easier to cope, because then those behaviors become less controlling over me. So I'm going to lean in. I'm going to try something new. I'm going to allow myself to mispronounce and have thoughts, and hopefully you'll enjoy a little bit more of my personality coming through on that end. I know I really love listening to podcasters and comedians like H3 and Nicole Byers because they have this one take. They're very real, and it's like I'm in the room, you know, listening in on their conversation. So here we go. I am going to take episode by episode and cover each type of trauma more in depth. And I'm going to start with child abuse because I think it's something that affects more adults than they may realize. I certainly fell under that category. It wasn't really until my 20s that I came to learn, acknowledge, and accept the fact that I had been abused as a child. I didn't think that I was because I wasn't physically hit. Lots of other stuff happened, but I was never hit. So I said, oh, you know, that wasn't really abuse. I was told it wasn't abuse too by other people. And I think finding out and really accepting that what happened was not okay and it was actually abusive has really been validating and empowering for me and allowed me to understand these hypervigilant anxiety reactions and trauma responses that I've had. It makes more sense to me now, and when I understand and have that awareness, I can make different choices with my behavior. So that's what I'm trying to do. So let's talk about what child abuse is, because it's a lot more than just physical abuse. It's more than just action. So the caregiver actively hurting somebody, you can also really hurt somebody by not acting, by passively not taking action. That's called neglect, and sadly the largest reported form of child abuse, and something that can really lead to very prolonged changes in your brain chemistry that can affect you for the rest of your life if you don't do something about it. So there are many forms of child abuse: neglect, physical abuse, sexual abuse, exploitation, psychological abuse, educational abuse, medical abuse, and emotional abuse. So all these different umbrellas of ways that this can occur. And what's really detrimental about this type of abuse, because it usually goes on for a really long time, because this is your child and you're stuck in that situation. So it exposes you to toxic stress, that strong, frequent, and prolonged activation of your stress response system. That's something that we talked about in episode 2, the freeze, flight, fight, fawn response. I said that in the wrong order. It's fight, flight, freeze, fawn. And those are the ways our body innately kicks in when we have this trauma response, and our brain senses danger and fear, and it's meant to protect us. However, when you're constantly living with that heightened awareness, even after you've left the dangerous situation years later, your body is still programmed to be on high alert, and that's very stressful and draining, and it causes inappropriate reactions to situations, and it's tough. That's definitely something I've dealt with. So a lot of people and therapists call these adverse childhood experiences that causes trauma, they call that ACE. So ACEs, A-C-E, adverse childhood experiences. And ACEs can literally change your brain chemistry and architecture. And it can cause a variety of mental health problems and physical health concerns. So I'm going to talk about each kind of type of childhood abuse a little bit more, how you can identify it's happening, signs in a child and signs in a caregiver, because I think it's important. We all know children in our lives, and just to be aware can help maybe prevent and stop that from happening to someone that you know. And it can also validate your own experiences. You know, if you're listening to these descriptions and it's hitting home, you know, you start to have that awareness to work towards acceptance of like what you went through as being abusive. You don't have to be a victim to accept and acknowledge that you can be a thriver, which you already are just by listening, trying to learn more. So physical abuse, that includes striking, kicking, burning, biting, hair pulling, choking, throwing, shoving, whipping, or any other action that injures a child. Even if the caregiver didn't mean to cause injury, if the child is hurt, that's abuse. And it can result in bruises on the child, blisters, burns, cuts, scratches, internal injuries and brain damage, broken bones, sprains, dislocated joints, lifelong injury, and even death. It's incredibly serious and dangerous. And signs of a physical abuse situation in a child is if you see any injury to an infant that's not yet crawling. You know, how are they able to get injured if they can't really move and bump into things yet? Another sign is obviously visible injuries and injuries on the body that are at different stages of healing. So I'm going to pause real quick. This is part of that whole one take thing, not doing it perfectly. But something I didn't mention in the beginning of this episode that I'd really like to call to attention now is a trigger warning. the things I'm going to describe, you know, such as signs of physical abuse in a child, sexual abuse and more, it's going to be triggering for some of those just to hear the graphic kind of descriptions of like what that is. So I just want you to be aware and take care of yourself. And if you want to click out because you don't want to hear it, that's fine too. So trigger warning for this episode. Okay, I'm accepting that moment and I'm moving forward. Okay, so continuing on for physical signs of abuse in a child. So you notice injuries at different stages of healing on the body. So that's a sign of it kind of being ongoing and not just like from one event when they fell, supposedly. Also on different surfaces of the body. So not in just one spot, but there's a bruise here, a scratch there, a bump here. Also, if the child tries to explain it in a way that doesn't make sense or match up with the level of the injury. And signs that a caregiver is being abusive. They can't or won't explain the injury on the child, or their explanation doesn't make sense. You notice that they display aggression towards a child or is overly anxious about their behavior. The child's behavior. They indicate and tell you that their child is not trustworthy or a liar, a troublemaker, evil. They try to sway you so that if this child was to tell you something that you wouldn't believe them. Also, if they delay or prevent or neglect to get medical care for the child. So you're noticing these injuries and they weren't taken to the doctor or the emergency room. Or if they take the child to different doctors and different hospitals, because if they go to the same place, they're going to notice all these injuries and they're not going to be able to explain it to the medical professionals, and they're going to know that the child is being abused. Or also when the kid is not going to school, not going to soccer practice, not going to church, they're keeping the child, they're hiding, and they don't want others in the community to see these injuries. So, it's not just physical signs that can tell us a child is being abused. You can also notice behavioral changes in the child, and that can be a sign that this is going on. If a child is aggressive towards peers, pets, or other animals, or if the child seems afraid of parents or other adults, they display fear, depression, anxiety, or withdrawal from their friends and things they liked. Or they wear long sleeves at a season or a jacket. They might draw or write about violent themes and fantasy. They might have nightmares and insomnia. They may be acting out for attention and have kind of emotional and behavioral extremes. And, you know, self-destructive behavior or attitude. So what's sad here is that those behavioral things that I just mentioned as signs of a child who's being abused is that I feel like, based on my experiences growing up with teachers and schools and institutions like that, these kids are labeled troublemakers and bad. And instead of getting help or people probing into the situation to see what's going on and getting them help, they punish them and discipline them because they're acting out instead of seeing like the reason why. So I think that's something really interesting to keep in mind. So another type of child abuse is sexual abuse. And that occurs when the adult uses a child for sexual purposes or includes them in sexual acts. It also is when a child who is older and more powerful uses another child for sexual gratification or excitement. So there's a big spectrum of types of sexual abuse. And sadly, about 21% of adults report being sexually abused as a child. It can include non-contact abuse, so not somebody touching you, but it can be just as traumatic. So examples of non-contact abuse is making a child view a sexual act or sexual organs, inappropriate sexual talk. So just being exposed to those inappropriate situations visually is considered abuse. Contact abuse is typically what people think of, and that's touching, fondling, oral sex, penetration, making children perform a sex act of any kind on someone else, or even child prostitution and pornography. So that one, it's tough. How can you tell through signs of a child that they're being sexually abused? So there's physical and behavioral ways that you can kind of pick up on the type of abuse happening in a child. Difficulty sitting and walking, or problems with their bowel movements, torn, stained, bloody undergarments, bleeding, bruises, pain, swelling, and itching of the genital area, frequent urinary tract infections or yeast infections, and any sexual transmitted disease or related symptoms. For me, that's really tough to say out loud and read out loud. It's just intense, right? I will now describe behavioral things that we can pick up on to notice that sexual abuse may be happening with this child. So maybe they don't want to change their clothes in gym class. And again, they're withdrawn, depressed, and anxious. Or they have an eating disorder, excuse me, and a preoccupation with their body, or aggression, poor relationships with their peers, delinquency and acting out. So some of these are very similar to what I described for physical abuse, but there's also subtle differences. So with sexual abuse, there's this preoccupation with your body because you're more aware of it. So you may start feeling bad about it or continue to over-sexualize it. And, you know, this can lead to substance abuse, running away, suicide attempts, fear of bedtime, bedwetting, acting out sexually. It can lead to poor self-image, poor self-care, lack of confidence, sudden absenteeism from school, decline in the school performance, and also OCD behaviors, unusual or repetitive soothing behaviors such as pacing, rocking, hand washing. And of course, if someone tells you that they're being sexually abused, you want to listen. You want to believe them and find out what's going on and be there for them. Another type of very traumatic abuse that happens under that umbrella of child abuse is emotional abuse. So this can happen throughout your whole life. It can happen as a kid. It can happen in relationships as an adult. And it's something I think to be aware of is very good and healthy to protect ourselves, because again, I think this is something that we disqualify a lot and don't acknowledge as actually being abusive. I know I have, because I love to disqualify things, and I have to be really aware of my self-talk and allow myself to own what really it is, and that's okay. So emotional abuse is when a caregiver harms a child's mental and social development, causes severe emotional harm. And, you know, that's living in intense fear, berating them, verbal abuse, and things that tear them down. And when that happens for a long time, it really diminishes your sense of self-esteem and self-worth that you'll take into the rest of your life. And that will kind of dictate the love that you accept. And I tell you, if you don't become aware and learn to love yourself truly, you will tolerate unacceptable behavior and abuse as an adult as well. So 10.6% of adults report being emotionally abused as a child. And emotional abuse can include rejecting or ignoring your feelings, telling a child that they're unwanted or unloved, showing little interest in the child, not initiating or returning affection, not listening to them, not validating their feelings, even breaking promises as a caretaker and cutting them off in conversation or stonewalling them and not talking to them for a little bit. Emotional abuse can be shaming or humiliating the child, calling them names, criticizing, belittling, demeaning, berating, mocking, using language or taking action that is aimed at the child's self-worth. Terrorizing, accusing, blaming, insulting, punishing or threatening abandonment, threatening harm or death, setting a child up for failure, manipulating them, taking advantage of a child's weakness or reliance on adults, yelling, screaming, isolating, keeping a child from their peers and positive activities, confining a child to a small area, forbidding play or other stimulating experiences. And even corruption is emotional abuse, engaging a child in criminal acts, telling lies to justify actions or ideas and encouraging their misbehavior. So, what are the signs that a child is being emotionally abused? Definitely a few overlaps of symptoms we've talked about for physical and sexual abuse, but I feel like each type of abuse has subtle differences. So physical signs are delays in a child's development, bedwetting, wetting their pants, speech disorders, skin disorders and health problems like ulcers, obesity and weight fluctuation. So those are a little bit different than what we talked about for physical and sexual abuse, but also some overlays. For behavioral, you should be on the lookout for habits like sucking, biting, rocking, learning disabilities, overly compliant or overly defensive, extreme emotions, aggressions, and withdrawal, phobias, sleep disorders, anxieties, destructive or antisocial behavior such as violence, vandalism, stealing, cheating, lying, or just cruelty in general, and behavior that's inappropriate for their age, acting too immature or acting too adult, and sadly even suicidal thoughts and behaviors are another sign of emotional abuse. So what are the signs that a caregiver is being emotionally abusive to their children? They routinely ignore, criticize, yell, or blame the child. They play favorites with one sibling over another. They personally have poor anger management or poor emotional self-regulation. You know, they fly off at the handle. They have high highs and low lows. Stormy relationships with other adults. Disrespect for authority. A history of abuse and violence. Alcoholism, substance abuse, and untreated mental illness. So another type of child abuse is child neglect. Neglect is when a parent or a caregiver does not give the care, supervision, affection, and support that's needed for a child's health, for their safety, for their well-being. It means that they neglect to provide physical supervision, They neglect their emotions. They neglect to take care of them medically, get them checked up, go to the dentist, or even taken to the ER if they have an emergency. And they also neglect their education. They let them miss school and don't help them with their homework and get ahead, and they don't take them to school. Physical neglect is when, you know, they're not getting the healthy supervision that they need. You know, food, drink, clothing, a home, structure. They need safe, healthy shelter and an adequate supervision. So physical neglect is deserting a child or refusing to take custody of a child who's under your care. Or leaving them somewhere and forgetting about them and not picking them up. Leaving them with someone else for weeks at a time. Failing to provide enough healthy food or clothes for the appropriate weather and size that you are. Failing to ensure adequate personal hygiene. And leaving them with inappropriate people that they're not safe around, exposing them to an unsafe and unsanitary environment or situation. Emotional neglect is something that we talked about a little bit. We talked about emotional abuse, but that's a little bit more active, and emotional neglect is a little bit more passive. Children require affection and attention to feel loved and supported and create that foundation of self-worth. So if a child shows signs of psychological, you know, illness and behavioral issues, it could be an example of emotional neglect. And that's when a caregiver ignores a child's need for attention and affection, exposing them to extreme and frequent violence, especially domestic violence, permitting them to use drugs or alcohol or engage in crime, or keeping them isolated from friends and loved ones. Parents and caregivers must provide children with appropriate treatment for injuries and illnesses. They must also provide basic preventative care to make sure their child stays safe and healthy. So examples of medical neglect are not taking the child to the hospital or appropriate medical professional for serious illness or injury, keeping a child from getting a needed treatment, not providing preventative medical and dental care, failing to follow medical recommendations for the child. And then there's also educational neglect. Parents and schools, you know, they share responsibility to make sure that children have access to opportunities for academic success, but, you know, schools can't get their part of the job in if a parent can't get them to school and provide them with the resources they need to succeed, such as a healthy lunch, enough sleep, school, you know, clothes for school that are clean. Examples of educational neglect include allowing a child to miss too much school, not enrolling a child in school, keeping them from special educational services that they may need. So what are signs of child neglect? You know, we mentioned a lot of different types for physical, sexual, and emotional abuse, and those really are similar. There's no one smoking gun to tell if a child's being neglected. It's usually a combination of a lot of things. So let's talk about signs in the caregiver. There is no typical neglectful parent like trope. However, there are certain behaviors and red flags that we can look for. Displays of indifference or lack of care toward the child, depression, apathy, aggression, drug or alcohol abuse, and other mental health issues. Or they deny a problem with the child, blame the child, views the child negatively, or even relies on the child for their own well-being, emotionally or physically. So, signs of neglect in a child. Their clothing is the wrong size. They're dirty. It's not right for the weather. They're often hungry and stockpile food, seeks food and even shows signs of malnutrition, like protruding bones or a distended belly, very low body weight or height for their age, often tired, sleepy, listless eyes, hygiene problems, body odor, talks about caring for younger siblings and not having a caretaker at home, untreated medical and dental problems, frequently missing school or not having their homework done. So, psychologically, there are very profound mental effects from all these different types of child abuse and neglect. Anxiety, depression, low self-esteem, disassociation, flashbacks, hypervigilance, persistent fears. They may engage in self-harm when they're older, eating disorders, alcohol and drug use, have persistent trouble sleeping, and uncomfortable with physical contact from other people, even someone they're in a relationship with. They may be repeating grades in school and partaking in criminal activity. But it's not just these psychological and emotional repercussions. There's physical health consequences as well. It can lead to diabetes, lung disease, vision problems, arthritis, brain damage, high blood pressure, functional limitations, heart attack, and back problems. It took me a really long time to kind of come to terms with the fact that I had chronic back pain for most of my 20s, and it was bad. It's so bad that I went to a doctor and got recommended physical therapy and met with a few surgeons to talk about having a surgery for the scoliosis that I was in so much pain. And then I started dialectic behavioral therapy, and as part of that, I made a dream come true, and I took horseback riding lessons. And I was for sure that this was going to kill my spine. You know, there was a point where I couldn't even carry a backpack through the airport because it just hurt me so bad for days afterwards. So I started going to dialectic behavioral therapy about 6 months after as I'm in the program. Halfway through, I started horseback riding lessons, and I was fine. I didn't have more back pain than normal associated with that sport, and I was doing trauma exposure therapy and really facing the traumatic memories in a way I've never done. And now I don't have back pain. I don't have the chronic pain that I used to. And it used to just be so bad. I would complain about it all the time, and just it was something I had to live with. And now I don't, and I work out. I was always afraid to do weights or lift anything because I didn't want to tweak it, you know. And now I'm working out more to try to be physically strong. And it's really true what they say, that trauma can store itself in the body as chronic pain. Because there's really no explanation for me as to why suddenly after 8 years I don't have this crippling back pain every day. I didn't really do anything different. Except kind of lean into the trauma, I guess. So these physical consequences can be linked to adverse childhood experiences and this child abuse. When it happens as a young kid, it's also associated with certain regions of the brain failing to form and function and grow properly. So, for example, a history of maltreatment may be correlated with, like, reduced volume and overall brain size, and it may affect the amygdala, the hippocampus, the cerebral cortex, all of it. And all of these have very important functionalities for processing emotions and protecting us. So having these happen when you're a very young kid or child can damage those parts from developing And obviously that's going to affect you for the rest of your life. So it can diminish your cognitive skills and executive functioning. You know, disrupt brain development as a result of this maltreatment can cause impairment with memory, self-control, emotional regulation, cognitive flexibility. And children who were maltreated are at risk for other cognitive problems, such as difficulty learning and paying attention. You can also develop different issues with attachment and have social difficulties. You know, infants in foster care who have experienced maltreatment followed by disruptions in that early caregiving phase can develop attachment disorders. And that can negatively affect a child's ability to form positive peer, social, and romantic relationships later in life. Additionally, children who experience abuse and neglect are more likely to develop antisocial traits as they grow up, which can lead to isolation and even criminal behavior. It also leads to things like post-traumatic stress, which is characterized by symptoms as persistently re-experiencing the traumatic event in your body related to that abuse, avoiding people, places, and events that are associated with that abuse, having flashbacks and feeling fear, horror, anger, guilt, shame, being startled easily. So just basically that existence of being hypervigilant all the time. And it can also lead to thoughts of suicide and major depressive disorder. So what do we do about it? We talk about it. We learn more about it, and we accept and validate our own experiences. I've tried a lot of different types of therapy. Psychotherapy, which is like talk therapy. Cognitive behavioral therapy, which focuses on your thought process. And dialectic behavioral therapy, which focuses on your behaviors. I've been to group support meetings. I've read dozens of self-help and, you know, critical articles on the subject. And what was most effective for me was facing the trauma, not just talking about it, but really following the dialectic behavioral therapy process, which is really science-based. And, you know, you have this schedule of working towards these memories, and then you face them in a way that, you know, you'll never be able to forget, but you bring down the emotional impact that the memories have on you by continually facing them and accepting them. Practicing mindfulness, yoga and breathing, stretching, self-care, and also the distress tolerance skills that I talk about in one of my episodes, where I cover distress tolerance for COVID, living in the pandemic and having panic attacks and anxiety and crushing, grieving depression. You know, the tips that I've learned in DBT, dialectic behavioral therapy, that really helped me cope, because when you can't change it, you have to accept it. And when you accept it, you're tolerating it and you're getting through to the other side. And when you're trying to change it, you're becoming aware of the things that you do have in your control, and you're choosing to change your behaviors in hopes of working towards acceptance and being more calm and regulated and at peace with the present moment, not worried about the past, not worried about the future. So that's all I got for today on child abuse. Wow, that was, I liked doing that in one take. Next week, I think I'm going to take a look at this new documentary I just watched about Paris Hilton. Never really knew much about her, but after watching this documentary, I have a lot of respect and admiration for her. You know, I'd love to give her a hug. And I think there's some interesting things about her behavior and her journey that directly result and relate to trauma. So it might be interesting to talk about. It's on YouTube if you want to check it out. I might also not do that. So no promises. I think if I don't, I'll continue on my journey talking about different types of traumatic events and situations, you know, kicking it off with sexual abuse, because I think that's really a lot more common than we like to admit. So stay tuned for next time and keep thriving. Wear a mask. Drama mama.